Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Fridge Air Purifier. Extend the life of your food and get rid of those bad odors for good. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and save $10 with code HOWIEFRESH.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We have a lot to get to today. Hunter Biden was on a podcast. So could podcasting be far behind? I mean, added to his LinkedIn profile, this man has more jobs. He's everywhere. He is Forrest Gump. Everywhere you turn, Hunter Biden is there.
He was on an art podcast.
Yes, of course, talking about his $500,000 paintings. We will get to that. We have some really crazy Karen stories and all sorts of good stuff. But I'm very excited. My next guest, Libby Emmons, you know her from the Post Millennial, from the Federalist. Who doesn't she write for? She's the busiest woman in conservative writing. Libby, thank you so much for coming on the Grace Curley Show.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
Libby, so I think I'm going to start with what's happening in New York. And first, I'm going to read you. Now, guarantee this is not confirmed. This is Jack Posobiec. He tweeted this out yesterday. I want to get your reaction, and I want to hear if you think this is possible. He said, White House chatter is that lockdowns for Delta variant all but a done deal. Virtually all blue states are cooperating with the White House and the CDC. They're aiming for late second week of August, per White House official. Do you think they're going to do this again?
Do I think they're going to lock down again? Now, I trust Jack. I think he's he always knows exactly what's going on somehow. He's kind of amazing at that. I don't know, however, if we're going to see lockdowns like that in New York City. New York City is a population that is compliant up to a point. I live here. I've lived here for 20 years. New York City is the kind of place where when there's a red light and there's a lot of pedestrians and they want to cross the street, at a certain point, 20 pedestrians will just decide that it's time to cross Broadway and nothing is going to stop them. So I don't know if I don't know that I would try that in New York. New Yorkers right now, it's sort of fascinating, right? New York is a very leftist city. I hang out downtown. There's lots of leftists downtown. During the course of the pandemic, you would hear lots of leftist journalists, et cetera, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda supposedly never left his house, all of this. And then you'd go downtown where all the bars were, and everybody's just hanging out outside, getting drunk, doing whatever, no concern, because the rules are for other people, right? They're not for the ones who give the rules. The rules are for the people who the rules are given to. So I'm not sure. But then again, if you had asked me a year ago or before, you know, whenever it was, who knows, time has no meaning. If you had asked me, is New York City going to lock down? Are people going to do what they're told? I would have said, nah, you're insane. New York is never going to do that. Yet there we went. I don't know. My goodness. What a nightmare that would be.
And Libby, Carol Markowitz is someone I frequently have on as well. You guys are two of my favorite writers. And I remember her tweeting something about that as well, about New York. She said, like, you know, I always thought New Yorkers deep down were just these fighters, that we didn't deal with BS. And it's kind of disappointing to see that, you know, we are sheep as well. And I'm paraphrasing, it was something, but I remember thinking,
it is disappointing.
Yeah, it is. And I think I feel that way here.
It's disappointing about New Yorkers. It's disappointing about Americans at large. Americans at large should not go around just doing what they're told because the experts tell us what to do. And I think the interesting thing, too, this week, we have seen a drastic reversal in guidance from these experts. No data is provided, right? The Washington Post called this out. Where's the data? Fox News called it out. Where's the data? When Fox News and the Washington Post are both demanding that the federal government fork over some data, you know we have a problem.
Yeah.
We are being told to do things without having data provided. It's almost as though the intention is to confuse us to the point of complete compliance, where we don't ask any questions. We just shut up and do what we're told. And as soon as we do that, what else are we just going to accept? What else are we just going to eat? What other lies There are just so many lies. If you look back over the past year, and conservatives certainly have had whiplash because we've been going around for a while. Everybody has good intentions. No one really wants to destroy the country. Yet policy after policy comes down, contradiction upon contradiction, reversals. It's hard to know which way is up. It's hard to know what the next rules and regulations are going to be that we're just supposed to eat. Americans should not behave in such a way. We should not just accept what we're told. One thing that I think categorizes all Americans, or ought to, or used to, or at least this is what I learned in my history classes, is, you know, from Revolutionary War heroes to slave revolts, we don't just sit down and do what we're told.
Right. We don't just take it. Yeah, no, Libby, I think you put that really well. But another part of this I wanted to ask you about, because I saw this headline from Fox Business, and I thought, this is insane. It says, Cuomo begs businesses to return to New York City after devastating shutdown. So now he's basically telling companies, you have to make your employees come back. You have to say, you know, game over, it's time to come back to work. But in many cases, I agree with that, that it's good for people to go back into the office. But in this case, I'm kind of like, well, I don't really think it's fair to make people go back to New York City so that Cuomo feels better about a recovery when who knows when they're going to shut down again. And also, New York is a complete mess.
Mm-hmm. And Cuomo was the one who said last year, we don't need you. Good riddance, right? When we're seeing people flee the city. You know, I had friends who left. They never came back. You know, who knows where they even are now. Cuomo shut everybody down. He was so belligerent about it. And to tell people that they have to come back. Now, look, I would love to see the city nice and vibrant again. We had some really great prosperity after Giuliani cleaned it up. And then Bloomberg, you know, brought in hordes of money, which I got to say did great things for the town. I would love to see that New York City return. But it's really not up to the governor. He courted these policies. He brought these rules. And to have him turn around and say, like, everybody go back to the way it was after everything he did, after the fear, after the, you know, Emmy Awards and everything, you know, it does seem a little disingenuous. And also, it's clear that he wasn't listening to his critics in the first place. There's something going on where, specifically, I would say, in blue states with Democratic leadership, the elected officials have forgotten that the American people are partners in their own governance. And instead, they're just meeting out these rules and regulations and expectations, and they're forgetting that. Americans need to be partners in their own governance. We don't elect kings. We don't elect rulers. We elect people who are supposed to do the job we put them in office to do. We don't elect them, you know, so that they can make decisions that go against our rights. That's completely anathema to what their job is and to what we want from them. We need to remember that. This is our country. It's not theirs. We need to take it back from them, and we need to remind them that they serve our will. We don't serve their will.
You put that so perfectly, Libby, and I think it summarizes how a lot of people are feeling right now. People are feeling very hopeless and distraught about this and the possibility this is going to happen all over again. But Libby, I've been avoiding this last topic because it grosses me out. Flora Gill.
Oh, no.
All right. You have to give people, first of all, tell people who Flora Gill is. I kind of know now just from reading about this today. But first, tell people who Flora Gill is. And then let's get into the tweet that broke the internet. I mean, this tweet was so strange, was so bizarre and perverse that she deleted it, and even then people still can't get over the fact that she thought about it, read it, and then hit tweet. She hit the button to send it out. So tell us who Flora Gill is.
She deleted it, in fact. Okay. Flora Gill is a journalist in the UK. She's written for the Sunday Times in the UK. She's written for GQ. She's written for the Daily Mail. She's written for a lot of publications. I believe her parents are writers as well, which a friend of mine in the UK was telling me yesterday. He was like, oh, I'm so disappointed. Her parents are actually good. She wrote a tweet that said, it's time that we have porn for children. Hear me out. And then she went on a little description about why we should have porn for children. She deleted the tweet. She said she wasn't up for a whole Twitter battle over her tweet. But then in comments, she proceeded to defend her assertion that what is needed is porn for children. By children, she said she really means teens. Still, I think the point is horrific, to say the least. And what it really shows is where we've come as a culture, that everything is on the table here. Her idea and her reasoning behind this, if you will, is that kids are going to see porn anyway, so let's ease them into it with some porn that's good for them. That way, by the time they're 18, they're really ready for the hardcore stuff, is my understanding. So we know porn is that, yeah.
It's really, Libby, I want to read the actual tweet here. Someone needs to create porn for children. Hear me out. Young teens are already watching porn, but they're finding hardcore aggressive videos that give a terrible view of sex. They need entry-level porn, a softcore site where everyone asks for consent and no one gets choked. Now, then she came back on later because obviously she just got completely ratioed. People were horrified.
Of course.
And now she's kind of playing the victim. Like, oh, I didn't, you know, hey, hold on now. This is getting out of hand. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You were the one tweeting about creating porn for children. No one made you tweet that.
No one made you say that, girl. It's insane.
It really is.
Really crazy. And so I've looked into this for a while. I have a son. I've had to talk to him about these kinds of things and how damaging it is, how important love is, how, you know, I've talked to him about how sex between two people who are in love with each other, this is a gift. You know, this is something God has given us. Life is a gift. We need to cherish these things. We need to behave appropriately with them. We can't just take them for granted and, you know, all of this stuff that I talk to my kid about. And that is completely missing from our culture, this notion that our bodies have meaning, this notion that relationships between each other, that physical connection has a meaning, that it's not just there for, you know, quick pleasure, quick hits, and then we're done. And we've seen, there's been a lot of research about the effects of pornography on young men that shows that it actually decreases their ability to find joy and pleasure in sex, in relationships with women. We know that this is true. Porn is consumed by 12 to 17-year-olds, and the fact that they're going to see it anyway, like, okay, so they're going to do drugs anyway. Should we just start handing that out in schools? It reminds me an awful lot of the arguments that conservatives used to have. This probably goes back to the last century and all that, about abstinence-only education, where this was decried as absurd because kids are going to screw anyway. So just give them birth control and Plan B pills and tell them that, you know, they can just kill their babies and it's all fine. Conservatives tried to fight against that, and at every turn, conservatives have lost these culture wars and gone back to their, well, let's have small government and less taxes. These things matter. It matters to our society as a whole. It matters to our children, and it matters for humanity. What kind of relationships do we want to have with each other? Do we want to stay in our little boxes where we're told and have hookup apps and, you know, never get to be parents and never care about each other?
Libby Emmons, thank you so much for coming on. I do have to end it there, but I want to say, beyond all that, it does show you just how perverse some of these Democrats really are. I mean, if that's what they're putting on Twitter, I don't want to know what they're writing to their friends in private. Libby, thank you so much. Everyone can follow Libby at Libby Emmons. Check her out at The Postmillennial or at The Federalist. She's a great writer, and she keeps up to date on all this craziness so that you can read it in a short format without having to go through Twitter and actually be part of that dumpster fire that we're talking about right now. The frenzied real estate market is causing bidding wars across certain segments. Real estate brokers are holding calls for highest and best offers because demand is so high. How do you as a seller know if you've realized all of the money for your property and if you've sold under the best terms? Recent real estate auctions for Grace Curley listeners have attracted as many as 30 qualified cash-ready buyers battling for their properties. And here's what you do. When selling real estate, you should let the bidding war experts for over 45 years sell your property quickly, contingency-free, and for true market value. If you have those three things, you sell your property quick, you sell it contingency free, and you know that you realized all the true market value that your home has, then you're in the clear. You've done everything right. Recent real estate auctions for Grace Curley listeners have attracted as many as 30 qualified cash-ready buyers. And at the end of your auction, you'll know that no money was left on the table. When you sell your real estate in the usual way with the broker, you pay the commission. But in a J.J. Manning auction, the buyer pays. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more on how to get your property sold quickly and contingency-free, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. Again, that's Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. We'll be right back. It's the Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potato
chips. You'll get nothing and like it.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
We got a lot to get to. All right. We have no time for niceties. We got to dig in here. I'm going to start with Joe Biden. He's pulling the classic straw man. He learned from the best. He learned from Barack Obama. But it's not even a straw man, because if you say something and then you go on to say, well, some people have said, but the some people you're referring to is yourself, that's not really a straw man. That's a you man. That's you, man. And so this is Joe Biden. I'm talking about how people, well, let's just, you know, I'm not as eloquent as Joe. This is cut 25.
I know some of you who are unvaccinated think the development of a vaccine was rushed. Therefore, I'm not going to take a chance. As a result, I think it's not safe because it was rushed.
Some people think that. Here's a flashback from August of last year. This is Joe Biden, cut 26.
If and when the vaccine comes, and it's not likely to go through all the tests that needs to be and the trials that are needed to be done.
Why would people think the vaccine is rushed? Huh? That's crazy. That's crazy talk. Snopes says no, that I am taking this out of context. This guy is such a complete joke. And while we're at it, I talked a little bit about this. I want to go into illegal immigration during the next segment a little bit, but let's set it up here. Peter Ducey finally asked the question that I have been wondering for a very long time. This is cut 10.
Just because you talk about this administration having a priority of protecting the American people, can you help us understand why is it that the federal government is asking vaccinated Americans to wear masks to stop the spread of COVID-19, but at the same time, federal agents are also releasing COVID-19 positive border crossers into small towns in Texas.
CBP provides migrant with PPE from the moment they are taken into custody, and migrants are required to keep masks on at all times, including when they are transferred or in the process of being released. If anyone exhibits signs of illness in CBP custody, they are referred to local health systems for appropriate testing, diagnosis, isolation, and treatment. CBP takes its responsibility to prevent the spread of communicable diseases very, very seriously.
What are the rules on gotaways? Do they have to wear the mask? What about that family in La Jolla? The family who was coughing and sneezing at a Whataburger until someone actually flagged down a local police officer and said, you better come check in on this family because they need some plexiglass. They're coughing and sneezing and getting everybody concerned inside the Whataburger. Do those migrants have masks on? And then they told the officer, oh, we tested positive for COVID. And in the article I read yesterday, it said, but we don't have the proof of the test. Why do I get the sense they're telling the truth? Because they're coughing and sneezing enough for someone to flag down a cop to draw attention to it. And then she says, oh, no, all illegal aliens who we welcome in with open arms, they all have to wear masks right away. Well, even right then, hold on, that's not enough. Because regular Americans are being told to mask on vax. That's the catchphrase. You wear the mask on top of the vax. But they're just wearing the mask. 30% of them don't want the vax. I'm lost. I'm very confused. Someone explain this to me, please. We will be right back. We got a lot more to get to. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Nobody loves mandates more than the Democrats. We had a great caller yesterday who said, if their ideas are all so good, why do they always have to be forced on people? Let your ideas speak for themselves. If people like them, they'll partake. But that's not how the Democrats operate.
Also, yeah. Mandate, shouldn't we call it human date or X date or
person
something like
date.
That? Person date.
I agree. So this whole idea of, you know, we tried our best to convince you dum-dums to get the vaccine, and now we have to take matters into our own hands. It's really picking up steam. And according to Jack Posobiec, who does have a lot of inside sources in the White House, he is saying that there's chatter for the Delta variant lockdowns to begin. And he says virtually all blue states are cooperating with the White House / CDC. I'm hoping he's wrong. I actually just messaged him to ask about it. I really hope this isn't true, especially in Massachusetts, where I think at least first dose, we're above 70%. So it seems absurd. The numbers do not add up. And when people say, I'm not going to do it again, I always ask, well, what does that mean? Like, are you going to go off grid and live in the woods? What real power do we have if they make us do this? But Bill de Blasio got in on this, and it picked up a lot of press because of just how strange it is. I never know what I'm going to get with Bill de Blasio. He's like a box of chocolates. I never know what I'm going to get. Is he going to be singing a little bit of funkadelic music? Is he going to be eating cheeseburgers? Is he going to be yelling and sounding like the Gestapo? I don't know what he's going to do. This is cut 23.
We want people to understand this is what saves our lives. This is what saves the lives of their loved ones. But we've tried incentives for months and months. We tried being, you know, communicative and open and compassionate, and all that was good. But we need something also tough at this point. Incentives, yes, $100 per person, great deal. Mm-hmm. But we need mandates.
I want to point out again here, and this is going to play into my next little bit of news for you guys, which Howie just gave me, which is insane. But I want to point out again, as much as they keep telling us that it's white Trump supporters, there are a lot of black people who have not gotten this vaccine. There are a lot of Hispanic people who do not want to get this vaccine. So when they talk about getting forceful and mandating this and, you know, time's up, we're going to do what we have to do, it sounds racist to me. It sounds like a dog whistle to me, because at a certain point, even if you're trying to convince people that it's all Trump supporters, that just doesn't add up. I mean, even the Kaiser Family Foundation had a poll that showed it's a lot of minority communities that do not have faith in this vaccine. And I'm not saying that they're right or wrong. They can choose whatever they want. All Americans can choose whatever they want. But I find it interesting that after months and months of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden spreading misinformation and really promoting vaccine hesitancy, that now these dictators are starting to talk about it like this is what we're going to have to do and you have no other options. I don't think black people are going to be crazy about that idea. I don't think Hispanic people are going to like that either. It's not just white, credulous boomer rubes who want to be able to make their own decisions. Which brings me to my next thing, and I can't even believe this. Twitter is really, it's the worst. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Vox writer Ian Millhiser calls for 99% income tax on unvaccinated, immediately bashed as a racist. So this was his tweet. Congress should increase the income tax rate on taxpayers who are unvaccinated and who have no legitimate religious or medical reason to be unvaccinated to 99%. This could be done through reconciliation. So this isn't hyperbole. He really wants this done, you know, and fast. His extreme proposal, this is from Breitbart, is fundamentally racist, as it would not only rob millions of Americans, many of whom have expressed legitimate concerns over the safety of the vaccinations, of their income, but it would disproportionately affect Black and Hispanic communities, which are getting vaccinated at lower rates. Less than half of Black and Hispanic people have received at least one COVID-19 vaccine dose in nearly all states reporting data, including a number of states where less than a third have received a vaccine, according to Kaiser Family Foundation. The numbers found the percent of white people who have received at least one COVID-19 dose are around 48%. That's roughly 1.3 times higher than the rate for black people, which is around 36%, and 1.2 times higher than the rate for Hispanic people, which is around 41%. So Ian Millhiser, through this idea, is sounding like Jim Crow 2.0 on eagle's wings, jacked up on steroids. I'm just not a joke, not hyperbole. I'm just going to say it how I'm going to call it as I see it. And Stephen Chung wrote, so you want to disproportionately tax black, brown and other POCs at a higher rate? Racist. A lot of people figure that out and jumped in on it. You hate to see it. I'm sorry, Ian. You know, it seemed like such a foolproof plan. I don't know where it went wrong. Christopher, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Christopher.
Grace, why did they just decriminalize giving people HIV in Illinois, yet someone like myself, I'm vaccinated, but if I didn't take the vaccine and in the future I kept refusing, I might be prosecuted or I'd have my life turned upside down. But you can give someone HIV and you're not going to face any consequences. I don't understand why they're choosing such an arbitrary thing to lock down entire economies and societies over.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, Christopher, because there's this whole debate raging about, well, it's not about you, it's about keeping it, it's about my safety. So if you choose not to get the vaccine, you're not keeping me safe. But I think that that whole concept is kind of wearing on people. I don't think that guilt trip is working as much as it did at the beginning of this.
Of course it is. It's just a ridiculous situation. So if I cough on someone by accident and they happen to get COVID, the risks are infinitesimally small. But you can give someone a lifelong virus that costs, I think it's $1,500 to $2,000 a month to use the antiviral drugs to manage something like HIV. And there's crickets. In fact, whenever you point this out to people, you know, my body, my choice, they pick and choose when they want to have it. And we're ruining people. People are committing suicide. They're losing their businesses, their mortgages. I know people in Massachusetts who are on the brink of bankruptcy. And up until before coronavirus, they had one or two homes and they were paying the mortgages off. We're turning people upside down. And this is just all about punishing people who have the wrong political views. If they were consistent, they would apply this my body, my choice, or not my body, not my choice stuff across the board.
I agree with you 1,000%, Christopher. You're always a good caller. And Christopher, I'd like you to listen to this next thing. This is Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, and he's speaking yesterday on MSNBC. This is Cut 11.
For example, if you happen to have a lot of interaction with folks who are unvaccinated, let's say you're a parent like me who has young children at home who are not vaccinated, that's a circumstance where being extra cautious and wearing that mask, even if you're fully vaccinated, wearing it outside when you're in indoor public locations is an extra step to protecting those at home.
Christopher, do you think parents are going to start wearing their masks either, you know, outside with their kids or inside with their kids in their home?
Absolutely not. And the people I see, I mean, the parents are doing what they're told to do. But when I'm out in public and I see parents with masks, they're touching the front of the masks as much as their children are. So even when people try to follow the rules and they try to be good citizens, people either aren't going to follow this or they're going to keep putting the masks on and off to such an extent that they're actually increasing their chances of getting the virus. It's all counterintuitive.
Yeah, and Christopher, all we keep hearing about is the Delta variant, but Phil Kirpin wrote something that I thought was really interesting, and it kind of echoes what the doctor on CNBC said yesterday, which is that this wave, this Delta wave, from what we've seen in the UK, it might not be a very long problem for us. Phil Kirpin wrote, UK Delta peak and crash happened right when they ended masking. Then CDC said Delta wave can't decline without masking. It's just like Christopher says, nothing makes any sense. And then the part of this that really bothers a lot of people, especially people in states like Texas, is how can you tell us to follow these rules and at the same time you are letting illegal aliens pour in through our borders? We see the videos. The Border Patrol has to wear masks, just like they can't say the word illegal alien and you know, just like they have to put up with all these rules. But the actual migrants, they come right in. You know, a lot of them don't. I haven't seen any come in with masks on. And meanwhile, That crisis at the border, I reported yesterday how Kamala Harris finally figured it all out. She found the root cause. She cracked the case. She solved the mystery. And there's a good piece in The Federalist, and it's called Kamala Harris, We Can't Secure the Border Until We Transform Central America into a Paradise. So if you thought this if you thought this was going to be a quick fix, you know, like, remember how Trump used to handle it so simply. He would say, we need to build a wall, you know, we need to protect our borders. That was too simple. We got to make it complicated. Listen to this. In just 5 months, it seems Vice President Kamala Harris has managed to crack the code on illegal immigration. All we have to do to ensure that Central Americans stop illegally crossing our border is to transform the Northern Triangle countries into stable, prosperous democracies. That's it. That's the answer. In her root causes strategy, that's only 18 pages, she breaks down, you know, why this is an issue for these countries. It's because their countries where these immigrants are coming from. These illegal aliens are coming from. It's because their countries are plagued by poverty, crime, corruption, and violence. You solve those problems and bang, you solve illegal immigration. But seriously, the vice president's root causes document amounts to a heap of bureaucratic nonsense from an administration that has never taken illegal immigration seriously and whose own policies have turned the border crisis into a storm of chaos. And that's absolutely true. They purposefully reversed everything Trump did. And then when everything blew up in their face, they said, well, we inherited this issue. It's a load of crap. For example, how will the United States accomplish these lofty goals? Kamala Harris is, she shoots for the stars. These are big time goals. You know, she doesn't want to focus on our country, but she's going to fix all these other countries. Take it away, Team Harris. Now, this is a quote from the root causes document. Affecting systemic change and achieving the desired end state of a democratic, prosperous, and safe region will require the governments of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras to govern in a transparent, professional, inclusive manner. Do you think that's going to happen? Now, this is from the Federalist. That's great, but does Harris know that the president of Honduras is almost certainly a drug trafficker whose brother was sentenced to life in prison back in March by a U.S. judge? Is Harris aware that the president of Guatemala, whom she met in June, is right now facing mass civil unrest and demands for his resignation over the firing of a special prosecutor who is investigating corruption cases linked to him? But please, let's hear more about how we'll never solve illegal immigration unless we get Honduras and Guatemala to govern in a transparent, professional, inclusive manner. Now, this is the important part. That, of course, is the whole point of this charade. If you begin with the assumption that the only way to stop illegal immigration, it's not borders, it's not the border patrol, it's not law. The only way to transform illegal immigration is to transform Central America into a model of good governance and economic prosperity, then you'll never stop illegal immigration. And it appears this is exactly the approach the Biden administration is taking. I think that goes without saying. Jessica Vaughn, we had her on the show a few weeks ago, and she always points out it's not that they don't want people to come in. They're trying to get people in the fastest they can. They're just getting overwhelmed. But the goal of the Biden administration is not to stop it. No. That would be awful. We don't want to stop it. So yeah, Harris thinks that we can't secure the border until Central America is a paradise. So you have that. You have that to look forward to. I don't know how long it's going to take her. We haven't gotten a timeline. How long do you think it will take her, Jared, to fix the government, the drug problems, the depression, the gender inequality of the Northern Triangle?
Longer than the 9 years before the planet's gone, I would think.
So. You know, I don't know. Maybe 8.5, and then we'll have that little half of a year, the six yes. months to really enjoy it.
She is a top tier candidate. I'm sure she can get this done.
Our friends at Eden Pure are launching a new refrigerator air purifier that is guaranteed to keep your food fresher for longer. No more frustration from opening up the fridge to find wilted and rotting food. It uses the same technology as the best-selling Thunderstorm that has sold over 100,000 units. Jared, tell people a little bit about this product, because we've really been enjoying it here at the Howie Carr Radio Network.
Yeah, it's basically kind of like the Thunderstorm air purifier, but a smaller version for your refrigerator, which is great because it keeps the food fresh. It gets rid of the microbes and the nasty things that you know, if you have a bag of lettuce that's around for too long or something like that, it keeps your produce fresher, it keeps your food fresher. And the best part is, if you have, I don't know, pulling a name out of the air, your boss who brings tuna fish in open cans and leaves it in the refrigerator, it also gets rid of the tuna fish smell in the refrigerator.
Yeah, he doesn't stop at tuna fish either. He brings in all sorts of fish. Haddock, anything he can find, scallops, he brings them in.
I mean, I love me some seafood too. I just don't want to smell it for 6 months.
No, and that's why this product is so great. It keeps your food fresher for longer, which obviously saves you money. But like Jared said, you open the fridge, you don't lose your appetite. It smells fresh, and it's really the absence of smell. It's just like the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. And right now, Eden Pure is offering $10 off the lowest sale price to my listeners this week. That's right, $10 off the lowest sale price with free shipping. Keep your food fresher for longer with Eden Pure. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word GRACEFRESH. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code word GRACEFRESH. When we get back, I have a few stories I think you guys are really going to enjoy. And then in the 2 o'clock, we're going to go over Hunter Biden's podcast interview. Watch out, Joe Rogan. There's a new sheriff in town, and his name is Hunter Biden. Also, we have Crazy Karen's coming up. A lot of funny stories there. We got a lot more show to get to. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Start the afternoon off right.
Now what? Here comes a girl. Here she is. This is just the best part of my day.
It's Grace Curley.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Governor Charlie Baker is giving some updates on the COVID-19 policies.
There's a lot at stake here.
Very curious to hear what he's saying right now. We'll keep an eye on that and fill you guys in on the other side. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit PerfectSmiles.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Who should be Biden's full-time press secretary? Jen Psaki or Karine Jean-Pierre?
I'm voting for Jean-Pierre.
75% of the audience agrees Karine Jean-Pierre should be the full-time press secretary for Joe Biden.
Familiarity breeds contempt, and we've had a lot. We're all very familiar with Jen Psaki's press conferences at this point. All right, so we will keep you posted on Governor Baker. He looks pretty animated, Jared. I don't know what he's saying, but I'm hoping he's saying I'll never bring back the mandates ever again.
I'm pretty sure he's not saying that.
I don't think he's saying that either. But this is an interesting story I think people will enjoy. Do you remember that Democrat?
Oh, that's why. He's at the Boston Youth Barbecue Vax and Basketball Bash talking. So he's around basketball. That's why he's so animated.
Did you know he's a basketball player?
I'd heard rumblings.
Democrat State Representative Jewel Jones. Do you remember that name, Jared? Jewel Jones?
Sounds familiar.
He got a little bit caught up in a scandal when he was pulled over for a DUI, I believe. Yeah, he was on April 6th, Representative Jones was arrested in an alleged DUI-related car crash. That's when he told the cops.
Oh, he's the one that knew Gretchen Whitmer.
He would call Gretchen. I think he said something like, he called her Big Gretch because they are homies. And he told the cops, like, listen, you don't want to do this. I'm friends with Gretchen. People drop her name a lot. Do you know who I am? Her husband did the same thing. Listen, would it help if you knew I was the husband of the governor? You could get my boat in the water quicker. That didn't go well. But Democrat State Rep Jewel Jones, he's back in the news. Not for anything DUI related, but reportedly he spent $221 of campaign money at a Dearborn, Michigan strip club in what the paperwork described as a March 2021 meeting with constituents about potential economic projects. Jones, who is up for re-election in 2022, told the Detroit News over the phone in a call that he thought the venue, the Pantheon Club, was a lounge and that they offered great lamb chops and that we have to meet people there sometimes. It's actually described as the oldest and most established gentlemen's club in Michigan. Number one in topless entertainment. We'll be right back. It's The Grace Curley Show.